Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, friends? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. Appreciate you guys being here. Today, we're going to be taking a look at the Packers' biggest offseason winners. Tomorrow, of course, then we'll have to take a look at the biggest offseason losers, which will be a little bit less fun, but today we'll enjoy the heck out of this one. Plenty of Packers that have had opportunistic offseasons, some things that have gone their way, and we'll discuss all of them today. Before we get there, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Dennis Stoller and Stephen Kelly. Appreciate you guys signing up. If you have not yet checked out the Pack-A-Day Podcast memberships, make sure to do so. Great, you know, opportunities for you to get signed up, four different tiers that are available to you, and get in the door as low as $3.99 per month. And of course, it does, or I should say, goes a long way in supporting the channel. So make sure to check those out. Otherwise, like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. It's honestly the simple stuff that goes so freaking far when you're doing this stuff full-time. Just telling a friend about the show, talking about Pack-A-Day Podcast, whatever you guys can do. If you're enjoying it, support it in any way that you can. But most importantly, always just appreciate you guys being here, of course, 365 days a year. We are getting ready for mini camps this week. We got two that'll be open to the media. Of course, I'll be breaking them down. I'll be there at both of those sessions. And again, following day, get you all the news and updates from both of those open mini camp sessions. It's interesting. I was kind of looking at some of the things. Of course, we've got mini camps this week, and then you've got that, you know, 4 or 5 week period before, or I should say between mini camp and the start of training camps. The Packers have three sort of things that they have on their to-do list prior to the start of training camp. They've got to get Jordan Morgan signed. That's going to be a big one. They've got their final draft pick that they still have to get under contract. That will be one of the to-dos that they have between now and training camp. I don't know, maybe extending Jordan Love, your franchise quarterback. That will be a huge to-do between now and the start of training camp. But we already heard from Goody that both sides are working to have that happen prior to training camp. It makes all the sense in the world. You don't want to get into a situation where you go into preseason and maybe you have a situation where Jordan doesn't want to play because, or his agent is advising him not to play because the last thing you want trying to get that big deal is some major catastrophic injury from a preseason game. So I'm sure you want to have that all worked out before the start of preseason. In this case, I'm sure before the start of training camp. So that's to do number two. And then Green Bay does still have an open roster spot available as well. So I think that will be kind of the final to do before camp. And then I guess the other one potentially would be, is there anything that you want to churn at the bottom of the roster? Meaning, you've had the opportunity now to see some of these undrafted free agents, some of the guys that you kind of brought in as fringe roster guys, and, you know, maybe some of the kickers that you have. You've got three kickers on the roster. Did two of the guys earn the job to training camp and one of them did not? Are there any other spots that you want to maybe churn at the bottom and say, all right, these handful of people, you know, appreciate your efforts in mini camp and OTAs, but we want to bring in some new people for the start of training camp? If you do go in that direction, you probably want to do that sooner rather than later so that you can get those guys signed, you know, now, so they have the full next month plus to learn the playbook before they actually get into training camp, especially knowing that they've already missed OTAs and mini camps, etc. So the sooner that you can get them in, the better. I don't know if this mini camp will be, you know, one of those situations where Green Bay does look to maybe release a couple guys based on performance, or if they're just going to kind of take what they already have and bring it into training camp, and these next 6 weeks are going to be relatively quiet from a transaction standpoint. But either way, three things that do need to get done. Again, Jordan Morgan, Jordan Love, and filling that open roster spot. All right, that brings us to our main topic for today, and that is our biggest Green Bay Packer winners of the offseason. And I'm not necessarily looking at here anyone that's like, oh my goodness, this player's looked incredible in OTAs. We've had three open practices in OTAs. We had two open practices for rookie minicamp. The rookie minicamp is 90 guys, mostly, I don't even think it was that much actually. It was a bunch of guys. Most of them were just tryout players. You had a couple guys returning, but for the most part, that was pretty nondescript. You had that first OTA practice, which was a lot of walkthroughs and snail pace stuff. Second, we got some two-minute drills. The third one, we saw a little bit more team activity. But to make any, you know, glaring declarations of like, oh my goodness, this player has been incredible or anything like that, at this point, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about players that have maybe returned from injury or have better roster circumstances now than they did maybe going into the offseason, or they could have, dependent upon what direction the Packers took in the offseason. And number one on my list, and I think you'll get kind of an idea of where we're going here, is the person you probably saw on the YouTube thumbnail if you're on the YouTube channel. That's Eric Stokes. I talked about, maybe a handful of months ago, and I've talked about it recently as well, where you didn't know necessarily, we still don't have a great feel, but we have a better feel of what kind of direction this Eric Stokes offseason was going to take. We didn't know if Eric was going to come back 100% healthy. Were there still going to be lingering issues? And even if he did come back quote unquote healthy, was he going to be the same player? He's had a lot of injury issues with his legs. His superpower was that 4.240 speed. His recovery ability with that speed and that size was what made him special. If he came back and he wasn't that same player physically, that would be an issue. And if he came back and continued to have injury issues or just wasn't the same guy, there was no guarantee that he would be a starter. There's no guarantee that he would necessarily even have a lead pipe lock roster spot on this team. If it went poorly, is what I was saying. Like, so if he came back and he just wasn't himself, this is a player who was, you know, really impressive as a rookie, took a major step back in year two prior to the injury, had the injury for the remainder of year two, had a bunch of injuries in year three, and now he goes into year four. They didn't pick up his fifth year option, and it's now like, all right, what do we have here? But it started really with the fact that Green Bay, the only major acquisition, and I use major extremely lightly here, the only acquisition that they really have at corner here is Kalen King, a 7th round pick. I mean, basically a priority undrafted free agent, especially in this draft class, with it being a little bit of a thinner, you know, 6th, 7th round this season, basically a priority undrafted free agent that they took at the very end of the 7th round. And that's not a diss on Kalen King, by the way. I really like Kalen King. I think it was a really smart draft pick at that spot. And I've been impressed from the little stuff that I've seen so far, but that's the real only addition here. If Green Bay would have went out and they had opportunities to draft corners in the 1st round, in the 2nd round, and all throughout the draft, they could have been more active in free agency at the cornerback position. And they really did nothing, like I said, other than drafting Kalen King in the 7th round. And that goes to show you that they probably feel pretty good about their overall corner room. Now, they did re-sign Keyshawn Nixon. They re-signed Corey Ballantyne, but those were bringing on their own guys back from, you know, these past couple seasons. Those deals made sense. They didn't go and break the bank at corner. If they would have gone out and signed a big name free agent corner, all right, that probably tells you all right, they probably don't have a great feel on Eric Stokes. If they would have drafted a guy in the 1st, 2nd round, you'd have said, all right, you know, maybe Stokes and Ballantyne aren't going to be the guys on the outside. But they didn't do that. Maybe it's just happenstance. Maybe they just had other guys graded better, but usually positional value and certainly the depth that you have on your current roster is going to play a part in those decisions. And I'm sure if Green Bay did not feel comfortable with their corners, they would have went out and drafted heavily at the position or signed some free agents, and they did neither. They really did neither. So if you're Eric Stokes and you're wondering how this season is going to go or how this offseason is going to go, and then you see them not really draft anyone other than Kalen King, no free agent signings. And really then the other thing too, Green Bay has put a lot of time and money into figuring out what was wrong with Eric Stokes and Christian Watson, and seemingly have figured it out. And they put the energy into that to make sure that Eric was in a position to succeed and that he can be what I'm sure they hope they thought they were getting when they drafted him in the 1st round and he had such an impressive rookie season. I've talked about a million times this offseason. Eric doesn't need to come in and be this shutdown number one corner. If he can just be rookie version of Eric Stokes, that is a heck of an addition to this secondary. So this is setting up perfectly for Stokes. And then you add on to the fact that he was the starter in those 3 OTA sessions. Now, the 3rd one, no Jair Alexander. So, you know, kind of by default at that point, a little bit more, but still. And then the 2nd two, when Jair was there, and I personally thought going in that we would see more of a rotation between Ballantyne and Stokes. We did not. It was Eric Stokes as the starter. Valentine was down on the other end. That is a telling proclamation from the Packers. And we never want to read too much into OTA starters. A lot can change between now and the regular season, but it's a good start for Eric Stokes. I'll say that. And then add on to the fact that Matt LaFleur said that he's the best physically and mentally that he's ever looked. That's certainly a good sign. And maybe most importantly of all of this, outside of his health, I guess, is you have a defensive coordinator now in Jeff Hafley that really fits Eric Stokes, you know, playing style. Joe Barry plus Eric Stokes was never really a match made in heaven. What Joe Barry wanted from his corners was not what Eric Stokes did well, nor was it a lot of other cornerbacks did well either, but that's another topic for another day. But Eric now in this situation where he has the ability to be a starting corner, playing a lot more press man coverage on the outside, sign me up. He has every ability to do that. And as you know, I went back and I watched all the press man cover snaps from this last season, specifically with Jair, Valentine, Nixon, and Stokes, even though it was a small sample size for Stokes. I was impressed by all of those guys. And even Eric Stokes, in a situation where he only got two games and he was clearly very rusty coming back from basically over a year and a half of injury issues, I still thought in press man, he looked a lot more like himself. He looked like Eric Stokes. And now he's probably going to get more opportunity to play in that style of a system. That's a huge benefit for him as well. You also have new safeties that are going to be backing him up. Sometimes as a corner, if you don't have safeties that you trust behind you, and I'm not necessarily saying that that was the case with Darnell Savage and, you know, some of the other safeties, but if you don't have that trust with the guys behind you, you can play a little bit different. If you trust those safeties behind you that they're going to make the play if something goes wrong on your end, you're going to be able to fit, you know, play a faster, more aggressive style of football, and that's going to serve Eric Stokes better as well. Now, the only thing for Eric that did not go well is that they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. However, if the consolation prize for that is that he becomes an unrestricted free agent in the offseason, that's not the worst consolation prize for Eric here. Like, he has the ability to go out, as of right now, seemingly as the starting cornerback for the Green Bay Packers, prove why he was taken in the first round of the draft, prove that he is still that dude, and if he goes out and has a great year, he could make as much or more than what he was set to make if they did pick up that fifth-year option, and it could even be more beneficial because he could get a longer-term deal than what just that one-year fifth-year option would have been. Now, it's not guaranteed. He has to play well, but he still has that ability, and he could go out and out-earn what even would have been in that fifth-year option. I'm not saying it's likely. I'm not saying it's, you know, I would bet on it, but it's still within the realm of possibility. So everything for Eric this year, this offseason, I don't think could have possibly gone better. They didn't try to replace him with a free agent. They didn't try to replace him with a draft pick. He's getting the starter reps over Carrington Valentine. They put everything into figuring out what was up with his injury issues. There's a defense now that's better set up to utilize his skill set. They put better safeties behind him. Like, outside of, again, the fifth-year option not being picked up, which may or may not be detrimental or not, it was a perfect offseason for Eric Stokes. And hopefully this sets him up for success, both now and in the future, and he can go out and crush it this year as the starting corner opposite of Jair Alexander. Hey everybody, we are officially in the thick of the NBA and NHL finals, and over the course of the next couple weeks, we will crown new champions in both leagues. We're also in the midst of baseball season. The WNBA is seriously heating up with crazy new stories every single day. And don't forget about esports either. Whatever your interest is, make it more interesting with Prize Picks. There's always action on Prize Picks, and right now, every Wednesday and Saturday in June, if your esports lineup doesn't win, you'll get your entry fee back. Choose from Counter-Strike 2, Call of Duty, League of Legends, and so many more. And of course, there are still plenty of incredible selections available during the NHL and NBA finals, and right now, Prize Picks is lowering select player stat projections on Tuesdays, which increases your chances of getting a win. There are a ton of unique promotions available that you will not want to miss out on. This week, I'm expecting a massive performance from two of the biggest stars in the world, Connor McDavid and Luka Doncic. Both need huge performances to give their respective teams a chance to win a championship, so I'm going heavy with those two. I'm also going with Sabrina Ionescu in the WNBA. There's never been a better time to get in the action with Prize Picks, and we're making it easy for you here at Packaday. Just download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code Packaday for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. As many of you know, a few years back, the Milwaukee Bucks were in the NBA Finals, and I desperately wanted to go to Game 6 in Milwaukee to see them win the championship. As you can imagine, prices were insane, and I kept going back and forth with different apps to try and find the cheapest tickets possible. I finally found them, clicked purchase, and of course, they were gone. Goodbye, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Now, thankfully, the day of the game, I was able to find a ticket, but the entire thing was so expensive and way too stressful. I really wish I could have simply used Game Time to alleviate all of the stress and all of the hassle. I've started using Game Time app for purchasing all of my tickets, and I wish I would have done so sooner. From low prices to easy to find tickets to last minute ticket deals, the Game Time app is perfect for all of my ticket needs. Game Time is the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. You can get images of your seat before you buy, you can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two clicks only in fact, and tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never need to dig through your email. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. That's code PACKADAY. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Number two, Xavier McKinney. How about a 4-year, $67 million deal? The next best safety deal for somebody who actually hit the free agent market, not named Antoine Winfield Jr., who just was franchise tagged and stayed in Tampa. The next biggest safety deal was Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who got 3 years, 27. One less year, 40 less million in the deal. Xavier McKinney received $23 million guaranteed. The next best safety contract for anyone, again, that hit free agency was actually Darnell Savage, who received $12.5 million guaranteed. So he, you know, had what, almost $11 million more than what the next best safety got in guaranteed money. Maybe most importantly, he got out of New York. Now, I'm starting to go and watch every single snap of Xavier McKinney from a season ago. I'm a handful of games in so far, and then I'll do a deep dive on everything that I learned and give you my grade. I'm grading it as well. So I'll give my grade for McKinney from 2023. But man, even just early in the season, that New York team, I have no idea how the Packers lost to that team, by the way, but that New York team just was not very good. And of course, they had some quarterback issues, but even on the defensive end, you know, there was a lot to be desired overall, especially early in the season. Getting out of New York in a situation where they didn't really have any aspirations of playing for playoffs or a Super Bowl or anything like that, and coming to Green Bay, I have no doubt is going to re-energize and revigorate Xavier McKinney. So getting out of New York, I think, is going to be huge for him. He's another picture-perfect player in Jeff Hafley's defense. We've talked about it a million times. Jeff Hafley gave that definition of what he wants from his post safety, and it's literally like, oh yeah, that's just Xavier McKinney. So he's a perfect fit. He's going to be able to do a variety of different things. I have no doubt, absolutely zero doubt whatsoever, that Jeff Hafley is going to be extremely creative with Xavier McKinney. And I think Xavier McKinney is just going to be overjoyed by the style that he's going to get to play, by him being, I think, a utilized playmaker in this defense and somebody that I think has the ability to truly unlock this Jeff Hafley defense and maybe, just maybe, be the guy that finally helps turn this defense around. That's what I think of Xavier McKinney. That's what I think he can do in Green Bay. This is a huge offseason for him. There was no guarantee going in. We sort of knew Xavier McKinney was going to get paid in some, like, he could have got a 1-year franchise deal. Like, New York could have franchised him and that could have been it. And he would have had to go into free agency again next year. Instead, he gets this huge 4-year, $67 million deal. I don't think it could have possibly worked out any better for McKinney. I think he landed in the perfect spot and just a huge offseason for him. Number three, next winner on my list is Keyshawn Nixon. So first of all, you get the new kick return rule, which I'm not sure there is anyone in the NFL that may benefit more from that new kick return rule than Keyshawn Nixon, the back-to-back first team all-pro kick returner in the NFL. If they have to kick to him more and he gets more opportunities, that should very much set him up for success. Now, he might end up being, as we talked about with Justice Mosqueda last week, he might end up being too good. He might end up being so good that they just kick it out of the end zone. Even then, he is a weapon because Green Bay gets it at the 30 every single time. That's a pretty big advantage, or at least, you know, overall where you were even offensively a season ago. You'll take any yardage that you can get. Starting at the 30 is certainly not the worst case scenario. So the new kick returner rules should very much help Keyshawn Nixon and add to his value. The next thing, I think maybe this went under the radar a little bit. He got the fifth biggest free agent corner, you know, corner deal of any corners in this offseason. He got a 3-year, $18 million deal. He has the sixth largest average per year and the sixth most guaranteed money of any corner this offseason. That's not anything to sneeze at. That is a pretty big time deal for Keyshawn Nixon. 3 years, $18 million. And we didn't quite know what to expect. I think overall, if you go back and you know, look at some of the conversations that we had prior to the start of free agency, I think we felt that it was likely that Keyshawn would be back, but we didn't know what that contract was going to look like. I personally thought it was well within the realm of possibility that he maybe could have got a similar like 1 year, $5 million deal. No, they went in a lot more on him with a 3 year, $18 million deal. I think it makes sense. I think you get not only that kick returner, which we saw some guys go for like $3-4 million just as a returner per season. He's making $6 million per season. And we certainly see slot corners go for a lot more than $2-3 million. You combine those together and the value's there, especially when you get it all combined into one player, somebody who can legit give you, you know, a lot of snaps as a corner, a primary kick returner, if not the best kick returner in the league, can do some punt returning, can play some on offense if you really need him to. He can do all, you know, a little bit of everything, but he got paid. And then kind of like we talked about with Eric Stokes, they didn't bring in any other big time free agent corners. Kalen King is the only real new addition to that room. They did draft Javon Bullard. They did draft, you know, obviously Kalen King. They did draft Evan Williams, some guys who could play in the slot. They are cross-training Corey Ballantyne there a little bit, but overall, he still right now projects as the slot corner for Green Bay and still projects to have a major and significant role on offense and on special teams. All right, fourth biggest winner. I'm going with Josh Jacobs. This, similar to Xavier McKinney, is you get out of Dodge, right? You get out of Las Vegas in this situation. That situation, when I went back and watched the tape, and again, I'm going to do a deep dive on him as well as soon as I'm done with McKinney. There were so many negative run plays that had nothing to do with Josh Jacobs, just guys getting into the backfield. And Jacobs would even at times make 2-3 guys miss, and it would still go for a loss because of the jailbreak situation. When you were a defensive coordinator going against the Raiders, you were planning for Josh Jacobs. And of course, it should go without saying you had to prepare for Davante Adams as well, but you weren't scared of the quarterback. It's a lot easier to defend Davante Adams when you've got Aiden O'Connell at quarterback than it is if you've got MVP Aaron Rodgers. That's not a diss on Devontae. Devontae was dangerous still when Brett Hundley was at quarterback. Like, that's how good that dude is. So I'm not saying that defensive coordinators could just be like, we don't have to worry about that guy. But because of the quarterback situation, you were much more concerned with Josh Jacobs and you built a defensive game plan based on trying to stop Jacobs. That's what you were trying to do because you knew if he got going, then what is that going to do? It is going to make the quarterback's job that much easier. The Raiders didn't have what they needed to succeed at quarterback. And if all of a sudden the run game is going, now the quarterback's job is easier. Play action gets going. Now Devontae's a bigger issue. Now they can spread the ball around. Like, it just is a domino effect. So every defensive coordinator went against the Raiders and said, we got to make sure Josh Jacobs does not beat us. So getting out of Vegas and getting to Green Bay in what should be a perfect situation, in a perfect offense that is not going to be conducive to a defensive coordinator just saying, we got to stop Josh Jacobs. That is going to free him up to, I think, be the playmaker that we saw a couple seasons ago. He also got the third most guaranteed money of any running back. I'm sure there's a part of Jacobs that was maybe hoping for, expecting for a bit more guarantees, at least maybe the second best running back outside of Saquon. DeAndre Swift got a little bit more in guarantees, but still, he got a really nice contract. It's a little bit more of like 1 year and then we'll see sort of thing, but it's not the worst thing. He got a good chunk of guaranteed money. Again, third most guaranteed of any running back. And even if Green Bay does decide to go in a different direction, he becomes a free agent then and can go sign another big deal while he's still in his prime. So it's not a huge issue there for Josh Jacobs. As I mentioned, he goes to a perfect offense. He should get some help from Marshawn Lloyd and A.J. Dillon. I'm sure Jacobs would love as many touches and carries as he could get, but I'm sure he also understands that if he is carrying it 25, 30 times per game, that's going to wear him down through the course of the season. And Green Bay supplemented him by getting Marshawn Lloyd in the third round, by bringing back A.J. Dillon, and that should really make it so that Jacobs doesn't have to do all the heavy lifting. Not to mention that Jordan Love in this passing attack should take a lot of the burden on in and of itself. And then I think it also, for Josh Jacobs, should be telling that this team that signed him to this deal was willing to release Aaron Jones to sign him. Like, that if I were Josh Jacobs, I'd be like, holy crap, you're willing to cut Aaron Jones to sign me? Like, I'm absolutely taking that as a compliment. I'm like, that was like your dude. He was phenomenal when he was healthy, and I know injuries and age all play a part in it, but he was a leader on that team. He was obviously phenomenal come the end of the regular season and the playoffs. He looked amazing. You're going to release that guy, somebody that's been a staple of your team, to bring me in? Like, I'm going to feel like I'm on top of the world, that's how much they value me. So again, I think this is a big time win in the offseason for Jacobs, with the biggest thing being that he is out of Vegas and now with a team that should be able to utilize his talents to the best of their abilities. Number five on my list, for better or worse, forever you may feel about this, is Josh Myers. Green Bay, when they were on the clock in the first round, Graham Barton was on the clock, who got picked one pick later by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, announced as a center. They went with Jordan Morgan. In the second round, before trading back, they could have drafted Jackson Powers Johnson, what some people thought was the best center in the draft. In the second round, either before trading down or after trading down, they could have selected Zach Frazier, another people who many thought were the best center in the draft. Tanner Bordellini, former Wisconsin Badger center, was there for them to take in the fourth round. They didn't take him either. Every indication so far is that he is the center in Green Bay. And we did get that, report from Rob Domofsky that the Packers feel like Zach Tom could be a Hall of Fame center. Listen, with him being injured, and who knows when he's going to be back officially, I think you probably just keep him at right tackle. And we'll have to wait and see how this entire thing shakes out. And maybe things change as training camp goes along. But right now, they've basically said Josh Myers is not cross-training at any other position. Everyone else is. And yes, that includes Elgton Jenkins getting some time at center, Sean Ryan getting some time at center, and some of these guys moving around. But by every stretch of the imagination, it looks like Josh Myers is the guy at center for the Packers this upcoming season. I think Zach Tom stays at tackle. I think Elgton Jenkins is extremely likely to stay at guard. And he, again, is not cross-training at any other position. And the only guy that they brought in as a true center that's likely going to at least be a true center in the NFL, Jacob Monk in the fifth round, who is probably not ready to take his place right away. Could he take his place in the long term? Yes, that's within the realm of possibility. But with all the talk of best five and who could potentially be in that best five, it very much seems like Josh Myers is that guy. It doesn't seem like he has a ton of competition at that spot as of now. And I think that was something that we all had question marks on going into this offseason, is would they bring in competition for Myers? I think a lot of people wanted competition for Myers. It doesn't seem like it's going to be the case. We'll see how it continues to play out in training camp. But Green Bay had a lot of opportunities in the draft. Of course, they could have tried to sign someone in free agency as well. They could have just said Zach Tom's going to be the center. They could have just said Elgton Jenkins is going to be the center. They have not done any of that. And as of now, Josh Myers remains the clear starter at that spot going into the 2024 season. So clearly a win for Josh Myers. Number six on my list, maybe not somebody that's on the tip of the tongue for like big offseason winners or things like that, but Corey Ballantyne. Like, I think it kind of went under the radar for most people, and maybe I'm just naive, but because it kind of went under the radar for me, he got a 1-year, $2.06 million deal. We're not exactly talking vet minimum here. Now it's like double the vet minimum. It's not a ton more, but still, that is not insignificant increase for where Corey Ballantyne has been at in his career so far. He also got a quarter of that fully guaranteed, $500,000. That's not nothing either. If he got a 1 year, you know, $2 million deal, but, you know, got 100K or 50K guaranteed or something, I would have been like, all right, well, it's great that he got that base salary, but they could cut him at any moment and lose nothing and, you know, probably just bring him back for a vet minimum or at least offer him that. But with the 500K guaranteed, even if he does get released and picked up somewhere else for a vet minimum, like he still got $1.5 million this offseason because he's going to get $1 million on the base salary somewhere. And then he got the 500K guaranteed from Green Bay. And what it likely means is he's a really good shot to make the roster, a great shot to make the roster with that 500K guaranteed. And still a reasonable deal for Green Bay. Listen, Ballantyne was a great story a season ago. He really, really was. This is a guy that kind of just got jettisoned aside from the Giants. Green Bay picks him up. You go into last year, he doesn't make it out of training camp, gets released, brought back on the practice squad. And what you're thinking with Corey Ballantyne on the practice squad at this point is, this is a guy that you can call up and he can play teams for you. That's what you're thinking. You're not thinking, yeah, let's start him against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. You're thinking, if we have a bunch of corner injuries, the rest of the corners will move up in the pecking order. Ballantyne will move up and he'll be the guy that plays special teams. So not only just not like a 53-man special teams guy to begin with, a practice squad guy that you're thinking, if we call him up, he'll just be a special teamer. But he went from release to practice squad to 53 guy to special teamer to legitimate playing time to starting corner through last year, in large part due to injuries, and played in some really big games, including the wins against the Lions and the Chiefs in that win streak in the middle of the season. And he acquitted himself well. So again, not the biggest name here. And we can talk about the same thing at corner where they did not bring in a ton of guys this offseason. If you like, there's six corners, right? Like we'll see if somebody else steps up, and I don't necessarily want to rule out a Zion Gilbert or, you know, any of those type of guys who, you know, Robert Rochelle, who could get involved from a special team standpoint. But it kind of looks like on paper, you've got Jair, Stokes, Valentine, Ballantyne, King, and Nixon as your six. It just kind of feels that way. And again, had they went out and drafted a bunch of guys or signed a bunch of guys, it would have been a whole different story. So these corners really kind of benefit from the fact that Green Bay trusted them instead of going out and shopping and redoing the position, which Brian Gutekunst is not averse to doing. Look at safety. He goes and drafts two linebackers. Like he will make over a position if he feels the need. He did not feel the need, for better or worse. We'll see how that plays out. But a lot of big winners at corner because they trusted these guys and are going to, I think, believe that the system change and what they're going to do in the secondary is going to really benefit a lot of the corners that are already on this roster. All right, number seven on my list, Kingsley Enagbare, which should not need much explanation. He didn't tear his ACL. I think, you know, he said at the end of the year that he tore his ACL. He thought it. I think the Packers thought it. We thought it because he said it and it looked like it. It looked like a nasty injury. So the fact that not only did he not tear his ACL, but even after the rookie minicamp, when LaFleur broke the news that he may not have tore his ACL, it sounded like he still had a lot of things that he needed to work through. From that to, oh, by the way, he's going to start, OTAs completely ready to go and active in every single activity. Like they've been cautious with guys, you can tell, in OTAs. They didn't even need to be cautious with him. It's not like he's working to the side with a trainer or something. He is full go. He has no like brace on it. He's just full go. The fact that we went from likely torn ACL to he is full go at first OTA is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And for that reason, Kingsley Enagbare, a huge winner. And of course, they didn't add any edge rushers either, right? So not in the draft or free agency. So, you know, with Enagbare, right, he's clearly the fourth guy. Because Rashawn and Preston are going to be your starters, and LVN's going to get every opportunity to be that number three guy or even maybe beyond that. But if you would have gone and drafted a guy early or signed a free agent, like Enagbare goes from fourth to fifth. That's a pretty big drop-off for him. Like he's probably trying to fight to be active on game days. He's probably trying to fight to get any snaps, even if he is active. So the fact that they didn't add anybody there is really a huge benefit to him. And again, just the fact that he did not tear his ACL and is already practicing full bore, like that's awesome. Awesome, awesome. One of the coolest stories of the offseason so far. Number eight on my list, Colby Wooden. They didn't draft not only a single edge rusher, but they didn't draft a single defensive tackle either or sign anyone at edge rusher or defensive tackle. And it kind of feels like the big beneficiary here is Colby Wooden. They've got four edge rushers that we just talked about that are going to be your primary guys. They've got four defensive tackles that are going to be your primary guys with Wyatt, Clark, Slayton, and Carl Brooks. But it kind of feels like with what they've been doing and cross-training him at the defensive end and defensive tackle positions, plus with him putting on more functional strength this offseason, it feels like he can be the fifth edge rusher and the fifth defensive tackle on game days so that they don't have to have a fifth D tackle and a fifth defensive end. He can just be that ninth guy and be whatever you need him to be. And I think that is a win, but especially, again, the fact that they didn't add anyone at either of those positions. Kind of like Enigbari, where we just talked about it. If they add an early defensive tackle, things start getting a little dicey for Wooden. Do I think he still makes the team? Yes. But now you have to figure out, how do I get active? You're going to probably need some injuries, and things get a little bit dicier. But they did not add anyone at either of those positions. They're cross-training him there. He did put on functional strength, not to mention he's had a really good start to OTAs as well. I think this has got to be a win in some capacity for Colby Wooden. He comes in at number eight. Number nine, Malik Heath. Very similar story here to Enigbari and Colby Wooden. If the Packers drafted a wide receiver, like maybe at all, but certainly in like rounds one through four, man, do things get really, really dicey for Malik Heath. There's five guys that are making this team at wide receiver right now. You know the five. I don't even need to name them. There are five guys that are locks to make this roster at wide receiver. He's the sixth. And he still, even without adding anybody, has to compete against a seventh rounder from a season ago in Grant Dubose and a previous seventh rounder in Samori Toure, while he himself is an undrafted guy. And he has to compete with the other two undrafted guys as well, with Julian Hicks and Dimitri Stanley. But if they would have added a significant wide receiver to this roster, again, not only does he have to fight for the team, but even if they keep seven wide receivers just to keep him, he is beyond buried on that depth chart. Now, he will still have to beat out Julian Hicks and Dimitri Stanley, Grant Dubose, Malik Heath. But the fact that the only three wide receivers that they added were Julian Hicks, Dimitri Stanley, and Alex Magoo moving from quarterback to wide receiver is a huge win for Heath. And I do think that he still has a major role to play with this team. I think he ends up making the 53-man roster. I don't think he's had the strongest start of OTAs, but he's got mini camp and training camp to go and show why he was such a steal in undrafted free agency a season ago. And I think he is ultimately still a winner because I just think he's in total no man's land if they would have added any significant addition to that wide receiver room. And then last but not least, number 10, I do have a couple honorable mentions as well, but number 10, Jordan Love. Hasn't happened yet, but he's about to be an extremely, extremely rich man. Probably one of the top quarterback contracts in the entire NFL. Probably one of the top overall contracts in the entire NFL. That's going to be what really makes Jordan Love ultimately a winner. But they, of course, add Josh Jacobs in free agency, get a third round running back, hopefully to take some pressure off of him. They take a big time offensive tackle in the first round of the draft. He's already been in consistent MVP conversation. And what a difference a year makes. He is that dude. He is that guy. He is QB1. He is the franchise. He's going to get that mega deal. And going from last year where you're just wondering like, all right, buckle in. Let's see what this kid's got. Can he even be a functional starter in the NFL? To, oh yeah, he's just going to be the next great QB. And we don't want to put the cart before the horse too much here. He still has a lot of things to prove. It longevity is what makes this. You've got to do it consistently year over year. So nobody's completely crowning Jordan as like, oh my God, he's just, you know, the next Mahomes or anything like that here. But what a difference a year makes. He is clearly the franchise QB. And they're going to pay him as such. And for that, he becomes a instant winner this offseason just on that, you know, going to be massive contract that's coming right around the corner. Some honorable mentions, just really quick. Ben Sims and Henry Pearson, you know, specifically Henry Pearson. Josiah DeGuara is gone. There's no other H-back fullback on the roster. And Ben Sims could get some of those snaps, maybe potentially. But if they do want a legitimate fullback H-back type on the roster, it's only Henry Pearson. I've been kind of jokingly saying that the only player without competition on the roster is Daniel Whalen, but kind of Henry Pearson too. That doesn't necessarily mean they keep a fullback and Ben Sims could be that guy, but those guys definitely win because Josiah DeGuara is gone and because they didn't add anyone really in that H-back fullback mold. So if they want to keep it, it's either going to be Henry Pearson as just the true fullback, or Ben Sims is probably going to get more playing time and probably get some of those opportunities to motion into the backfield and maybe be that Josiah DeGuara type move, H-back, fullback type. So either way, I think those guys are a little bit of winners. And then the other one, Ryan Downard, the safeties coach. Going from Darnell Savage, Jonathan Owens, you know, the entire crew, Dallin Leavitt from his, you know, Anthony Johnson Jr. as a rookie, Rudy Ford, that group, to now having Xavier McKinney, one of the best safeties in football, and then adding, you know, he gets a second, like you can imagine him on draft day, like, oh yeah, they got me Javon Bullard in day two or in round two. Oh my goodness, they traded up for Evan Williams. Oh, they took another one in Ketan Oladapo. You can just imagine like the other position groups coaches being like, what the heck did you do to get three guys in the first five rounds of the draft at your position? But adding Xavier McKinney, the biggest free agent that they've added to that room, and three draft picks, including a second, fourth, and fifth rounder, that's a pretty big win for Ryan Downard. I thought he did a tremendous job a season ago with what he had at his disposal. I am so excited to see what he can do with this group of safeties, knowing what he accomplished with what, in my opinion, was a safety group that had far less talent than what this safety group does in 2024. So just to recap my honorable mentions, Ben Sims and Henry Pearson and Ryan Downard, the safeties coach, Eric Stokes, Xavier McKinney, Keyshawn Nixon, Josh Jacobs, Josh Myers, Corey Ballantyne, Kingsley Enagbare, Colby Wooden, Malik Heath, and of course, Jordan Love. That is going to do it for me today. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships. Speaking of which, shout out to Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Broad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, and Arnaldo Espinoza. I'll see you guys tomorrow. But until next time, and as always, go Pack-Go.